a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. This is Manna.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Manna, the podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson. Now, none of the guys that you're going to meet on this podcast would consider themselves extraordinary, but it's their humble, holy way of living that is exactly what makes them extra to me, and I'm excited for you to meet them. So, now, when I was growing up in the Lutheran church, I remember the hymnals that were in the pews, and they were called, I remember the title, they were green hymnals, and they were called, the hymnals were called Good News. And the more I get to know today's guest, the more I think about those hymnals, because I think of him. He is a good news man. Not that he's overly, you know, saccharine or naively optimistic, but more that he is full of life and an energy that exudes this confidence and a commitment to celebrate the good news. That this is a good life with good people. And you know, even in the midst of challenges and business and the everyday nuances and annoyances that we all have to put up with, God is good all the time. And your life with God and Him in it is even better. And if that sounds like a little kind of Southern preacher, that's appropriate because our guest today is, in fact, a Texas preacher himself amidst many, many talents and avocations that he holds. But that's, as I say, that's just one of his many, many side hustles. He's a motivational speaker. He's a singer. He's a mentor and a sales professional, a restaurateur. But most importantly, he's a husband, a dad, and he is my friend, which I'm just so honored that he is on the show today. So get ready for a little fire and brimstone, good news style, and welcome today's Manna Man, Mr. Brad Golden. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Jeff.
So excited.
Well, I'm
finally get to make the manna.
You are the manna man. You're a bit of an alpha manna man, and so you're from the great state of Texas, and yeah. And so starting off, that's kind of where I wanted to start. I mean, everything, you know, and a little bit of a cliche. Everything's bigger than Texas, but really, you know, when I think of all of the friends in my life that I'm blessed to know and be inspired by, and we are relatively new friends. We have not known each other all that long, but you have. From the I think the day I met you, I still remember in a meeting that we were in, and you exude so much confidence, and when I first met you, I didn't even know there was this depth of faith, but just the strength that you, just the bigness of you, you're just so, and that's why I say that, like you're a good news guy.
Overweight? You
know? No.
Oh,
no,
different.
No. Kind of. But so anyway, I just kind of want to start with just like, and not to be too cliche, but let's just go back to the beginning. How'd you grow up? Like, what did this sort of like, you know, and I don't mean to sound like a commercial, but like this zest for life, this embrace, you're such a full throttle guy, you know, whether it's in business or friendship or family. I mean, you just are faith, obviously, which we're going to talk about today, but you are just, you're all in. So talk about like growing up, like where does that come from? Or was it something that was developed or, you know, so talk about the Brad Golden growing up.
Well, growing up, I was, my grandmother, Mimi Ruby Smith, she was an inspiration to me. She babysat kids for a living. Huh. And we lived about half a mile from her. And my mom or my dad would drop us off every morning. And during the summer, especially as I got older. And so we would just spend time with Ruby Lee, Mimi.
Yeah.
And it was neighborhood kids. I mean, at one time she had 18 kids she was watching. And this was back before you would get the permits to do this. You know, they're just like, hey, yeah, send them down to Ruby. She'll watch them. So, and that's what she did while my grandfather, he was a welder. And he passed away when I was six. So I never got to really know him.
Yeah.
Except for through the eyes of my mother and her sisters. And through my grandmother. But she was a strong woman. She was, you know, she became single at the age of 60-ish.
Yeah.
And remained that way until she passed away at 86. And probably the hardest, you know, I've spoke at a lot of funerals and things, but my grandmother's passing was probably the hardest passing that I've been through at this time.
Mm. How old were you when
she passed away? I was 30, in my 30s.
Okay.
So, you know, I got to enjoy her for quite a while. And I was the oldest grandchild, so I was her favorite in my eyes. even though I also got the most spankings, because we did grow up in the South, and the switch was a thing. And yeah. If you don't know what a switch is, that's a limb from a tree, and going back and forth between your legs can leave a lot of scars and a lot of marks and a lot of pain.
Yeah.
But somehow I kept doing whatever I was doing wrong. So I saw it a lot.
Yeah.
But no, so she was a very strong woman, and you know, she was not a Rosie the Riveter. I called her Ruby the Welder. She welded ships during World War II, and they would put her in the restrooms on these ships to go in and weld the restrooms.
Oh.
And so it's interesting just to hear her stories of that while my grandfather was off at war.
Yeah.
They had four daughters, and my mom was the second oldest. But we moved away when I was six. We moved about 30 miles away to the suburbs of Dallas, south of Dallas. And my mom and dad, about 3 years later, separated and got divorced eventually. And my sister, I have twin sisters who were there with me. And so it was basically me, my mom, and my twin sisters. Mm-hmm. So it's different, a man being raised, or a boy being raised to be a man by your mom and two sisters.
Yeah.
And so dad was a every other weekend dad because that was the arrangement they had. We were off and on to church. And my mom got remarried. My dad got remarried. They both got remarried. My dad had three more siblings for me after he got remarried, but two brothers and a sister. And my youngest brother's almost 20 years younger than me.
Wow.
But my stepdad, when he came in the picture, then we started attending a Presbyterian church. And then we switched. When I got to high school, my mom switched to the Methodist church. Said, you know, we need to start going there because that's where all the high school, the youth group,
okay.
The bigger youth group is there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so let's go there and get you involved there. And so I did, and I was involved in FCA. In eighth grade, I'll never forget this, we had tons of guys in football and basketball and whatever else, and there was a big FCA camp coming up for the summer, and everybody was going. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And when it came time to turn in your paperwork, and all the paperwork was turned in, well, it was me and Chris Henderson. And that was it. It wasn't like 50 people all, yeah. Hey, we're going to have the best summer ever and go have fun. So Chris Henderson, African-American friend of mine, who is now a pastor in DeSoto, took over his dad's church. But so my mom, you know, at first they were planning on renting, you know, taking one of the school buses and taking all the 40 of us. So basically it was my mom and her Toyota Corolla putting me and Chris Henderson going to East Texas. Well, at the time in the early 80s, a white lady with a black child and a white child going to East Texas wasn't necessarily a common scene.
Yeah.
And I never thought anything of it until Chris pointed it out to me years later that, do you know what that was like? And I'm like, nah, I got no clue.
Wow.
So it was interesting times. But we went, we had a good time. And that's actually, that was the time in my life where I figured out that not everybody was true to God.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a young man, he was older than me at the time, but he was in the Southwest Conference, which is no longer there. He was an offensive guard, and he was the leader of my group. And Chris and I got separated there, which was kind of hard because he was the only guy I knew there.
Yeah, right.
But this guy took us in, and we were in a meeting, and they said, I want you to go back to your dorm rooms, your, you know, to your bed, and they'd given us a Bible. And I still have it to today. It's a little ripped up, torn. You know, it's quite a bit old. But he said, I want you to go through and find a verse that means something to you. And I'm like, man, I don't think I've ever really had to do this.
Yeah.
And so I remember sitting on the top bunk, and everybody in there was real quiet. Everybody was going through their Bible. I mean, we had a lot of respect. This guy had earned our respect.
Yeah.
Over a day or two, just, you know, showing his love for us and for God. And so I went through and I found Matthew 6:34. Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow, because today has enough worries of its own.
That's great.
And so I carry that with me. I've done, you know, I've preached on it in the streets of Brazil and and used it at weddings and funerals and everything else. And when you say I'm a pastor, I'm you know, online pastor, meaning I paid $25 to become, because my cousin was like, can you do our wedding? And I said, sure, I think, I don't know. And I got a little thing to do it. Anyway, I just enjoy sharing the gospel. Yeah.
But was that the marker, though? Was that camp, was that when it started? Or did you, so I'm picturing you now in the back seat of this Corolla, which is a great visual. Like, as you're going to this camp, if you can remember, like, were you already in, or did you feel like, okay, this maybe is going to be a thing that I'm going to get into, or was it just kind of like, you know, I'm just going to do this camp thing, I got my friend, like, or, and then was that the moment where it's just like, you know, because people talk about having these,
you know, ahas.
Whether born again or whatever.
Born again.
Like, was this it?
This was, you know, I had been through confirmation. What they call it, confirmation at the Methodist Church.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, I had been through it at the Presbyterian Church. So I knew God, I knew who Jesus was.
Yeah.
But this was my aha moment as to, a lot of people know who it is, or know who God is, or know there's a God, or know the story of Jesus, but do they believe it?
Yeah.
And this was the trip where I truly believed it.
That's
and
cool.
I got to know the Lord on a personal basis.
Yeah.
And so from then, I just started paying more attention, so to speak, throughout high school. And then when I got to college, I didn't go to church at all. My roommate was Catholic. And it was funny because I got to college and he said, hey, I'm going to go. And this was back when the drinking age was younger still. But he said, I'm going to go meet my what do y'all call, not parishioner, but your priest. Yeah, he said, hey, I'm going to go meet my priest for a beer or a glass of wine or something. Uh-huh. Like, you're going to do what? And like, he works at your church? And he's like, oh, yeah.
This is a social life, yeah.
And I'm going, well, y'all are both going to hell then. I mean, I, you know, and of course, I don't know. I don't, yeah. You know, and so college, you know, it was a separation. When I moved back home after college, then my mom and my sisters, my mom had been divorced again. And so she was done. She's never been married since. But she and my sisters had started attending the Baptist church there in town, because nothing to do with the religion, the label. It had to do with the youth group and the involvement and the, you know, the love of God just surrounding that group.
Yeah.
And so they were going to the Baptist church. So when I moved back, I was like, yeah, I'll go to church with y'all. And when I went, I'm like, what are we doing at a Baptist church? Mom's like, well, this is where the youth group is. Remember when we went? Okay, yeah, got it. So we joined in, and it's funny because my wife, who I met later, actually, I'd already met her after my freshman year in college, but we got married in that church. All three of our kids were born in that church, and then when we moved later, we found another church, and it was a Baptist church too. But I hate the labels,
because
to me, and this is me speaking, religion will send more people to hell than anything, because you're putting your faith in what a man has put together or told you. If you're not listening to the word, if you're not in the word, then you're lost.
Yeah.
And so I started looking, later in life, you know, and even today, you know, just different religions and what they stand for. And I'm talking about religions that are focused on Jesus as the center. As we know. But with Jesus as the focal point of that religion, but each religion has, you know, you can't drink over here, you can't do this over here, you can't wear, women can't wear pants over here and shorts. And it's like, well, you know, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Because we stop looking at things through the eyes of Christ and start looking at them through the eyes of a man.
Yeah.
With a different judgment.
Yeah. When that's a very mature perspective, though. You know, I mean, I feel like that's, I mean, so that had to have come, I'm guessing that would have, like, you sort of emerged into that or evolved into that. I mean, do you remember when did you, because it sounds like you just had a very kind of normal childhood, like, you know, the rest of us, you know, kind of ebbs and flows, you get confirmed, you know, camps or whatever, college, like we all kind of go through our little troughs of whatever. So when do you feel like you actually got that? Because that's super, like, I don't know, it just seems like a very mature perspective of what real, like, did that come later, like after you got married, or was it before, or do you remember when that kind of perspective emerged?
Well, I started teaching Sunday school,
okay,
and to high school kids, which made me have to make sure
yeah, you gotta know your
I
stuff
studied up on the word,
right?
But it was, I guess, just over time, just watching how people act and how people judge others, then I was like, okay, I don't want to go around judging people.
Yeah.
I want to go around loving people.
Yeah.
Because I used to have this vision. There was a rap group. I was big into Run DMC in high school when they came out in the 80s. And
sure.
But there was a rap group that came out called DC Talk. And it was just a whole different kind of vibe because, hey, wait, Mom, you can't not like this.
Right.
They're talking about Jesus.
Exactly. It's like Striper for heavy metal fans.
Yeah, exactly. And so was it Pantera too?
Yeah.
So anyway, I remember just thinking, okay, here's a bunch of guys just chilling.
Yeah.
I want to just chill. So I pictured if God ever came back, if Christ ever came back and just hung out for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
He would just be, and at the time, you know, we wore these high top shoes with laces kind of undone. And I thought Jesus would be right there with us.
Yeah.
Just walking down the street with us, hanging out, chilling. And so I looked at him as just the leader of the pack. Mm-hmm. And so it put a vision in my head, I would say 1920, that he can come back and be normal. And one of my favorite people in the Bible is Paul. Saul turns to Paul, you know, or changes, God changed his name to Paul. But, you know, here's a guy that once he met Jesus, he went nuts.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about, hey, by the way, let me tell you about Jesus. Yeah. He's like, if you don't listen to me, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, hey, calm down, Paul. Yeah. I mean, the disciples were scared of him because they thought that he was trying to weasel his way in to kill him.
Sure, yeah.
And here's this guy out saying, no, this is the truth. The truth has been shown to me. I mean, Jesus met him right there on the road to Damascus like, dude, this is it.
Yeah. No, and that is that kind of that full throttle, like just unabashed, just like all in. That, like I said in your intro, that's what you are, though. And like when I think of my friends, you are, that's you. Like you are all in, unconditional, a warrior for Jesus. And is that something that, so you talk about being raised by Ruby and through, like, has that always been part of your personality? Have you always, you are so effective. And we've talked on this podcast before about, you know, charisma and you know, the ability for guys to, you know, connect. But I mean, I feel like that is a gift that you have. I mean, whether it's through music, preaching, business. I mean, you do a lot of work with young people, you know, where you're motivating them. I mean, when, you know, has that always been part of your essence? I'm guessing it is. And then when did you start attributing it to, like it's a gift. I mean, this is what you've been blessed with, you know, to sure. be able to not just be, you know, the funny guy or the guy who knows magic tricks or whatever, but to actually put that, you know, in place, you know.
You know, but before my mom got remarried and then after her second divorce, I was the man of the house at age 9.
Yeah.
And so she probably instilled in me a leadership role uh-huh. because of the situation we were in. And we never went without. I got my first job when I was 14, working at a greenhouse where they grew plants and sold them to places. And I did that when I was 14 and 15 during the summer. It was a guy from the church, and he owned it, and I went to work for him. And I think I was making $2.75 an hour, which is big time.
That dates you.
Yeah, and then I started working at a daycare center. It was a private school and daycare center. And I started doing that when I turned 16.
Yeah.
And so I was around a ton of kids who were, some of them just 4 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And so we would have fun and goof around. And like you said, magic a while ago, I would learn little things to do with them to quieten them down and to get their attention and to do things like that. So I think that had a big impact because I worked there all through high school. And then anytime I would come home from college, I would work there Christmas break, summer break, Thanksgiving break. I was cleaning toilets, mopping floors, whatever needed to be done, buffing floors. I'd come in and he'd be like, hey, if you want to work all day Saturday, go ahead. Here's all the list of things that need to be done. So here's a man who owned a very successful school, private school and daycare center. And he would give me full rein to the place when I'm home from college. Yeah. So he showed a vested interest in me and trusted me.
Yeah.
And so I took that and ran with it. And then when I graduated college, I got a broadcasting degree, ladies and gentlemen, you know, that kind of thing. But I worked my way through college, which was another thing I think that was very important. Working your way through college versus getting a loan your way through college is two different things.
Yeah.
Because working your way through college puts a lot more focus on what you're doing. My grades weren't the best, but I was paying for it. Mm-hmm. So if I screwed up, it cost me money.
Yeah.
And my roommate in college was my best friend growing up. And once I came back home and finished up and we lived together, went through the rigmarole of life at that time. And then we got to, we were just two peas in a pod. We would go fishing together and we would go play tennis together and racquetball together and all these different things. And he came from a strong Christian background too. His brother is actually a preacher at one of the bigger churches up in Denton and Texas. And so anyway, we bonded, and then my fiance at the time, girlfriend, fiance, mm-hmm. Once all that took place, got married. And then, you know, my main thing is I wanted to make sure that my family was in a church and that my kids never didn't know, have that opportunity to get to know Jesus.
Yeah.
Because here's the one thing that we confuse as parents. We don't want our children to not to go to heaven. Well, I got bad news for you. You don't have a choice.
Right.
That's not your decision.
Yeah.
That's your child's decision.
Yeah.
And so we have to raise our children in an environment that allows them to gain knowledge and to learn who Christ is and what he did for them.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's a huge deal in raising my family.
Yeah.
And so in doing that, another leadership role, I got to make sure that I give my kids the best opportunity to understand and know Christ.
Right.
And not only through the church, but also through my own actions and words. And was I the perfect father? Nope. Just ask my kids. But as they get older, it's funny because they do go, hey, Dad, I got it.
Yeah.
Totally. I get it.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the fun stuff because all of them have now graduated college. And so it's now fun to, as of May, my last two graduated. And so it's fun to watch them kind of have their eyes open to everything they know and see it come to life and the truth that's been instilled in them and that they've accepted is out there for them to grasp and share now. And I shared this with my kids growing up that, you know, we're put on this earth for one reason, and that's to serve others.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so basically my whole life I've done nothing but serve in everything I do, whether it's the restaurant or doing somebody's.
Who taught you that though? And I know we don't have a time limit on this, but you know, I'm sensitive to time, but you know, when you talk about growing up, so you've provided that to your kids and to so many others. And as I'm listening to you talk about your own experience growing up, you know, and specifically since this podcast is called Manna and we talk about the role of men in the faith. I mean, like it sounds like you had to develop that perspective, that sense kind of, you know, at best sort of patchwork, you know, like you grabbed a little bit from this guy who was your boss. You grabbed a little bit from like this guy who was your friend that you went to camp with, this guy who's your roommate. I mean, or was there like a role model? Like, did you have throughout that course until you kind of, you know, came into your own, you know, is there any guy, because obviously you were surrounded by strong women, which is fantastic.
Correct.
But were there any men that you can think of, you know, along that path that you're like, you know what, this guy, like that's a guy who really kind of, you know, you could point to as a real influencer and who you became, because you are that to now so many people. Was there a version of you to you back then?
You know, I would say that's interesting, Jeff, because I'm sitting here now racking my brain. My dad was a hard worker his whole life.
Yeah.
Retired at 70 from selling cars, believe it or not. That lasted about 6 months, and he's like, I got to go do something. So he went back to work. So as far as work ethic and work, he did that. His father, my grandfather, passed away later in my 30s. He lived to be 91, so I got to enjoy him quite some time. But, you know, my dad was always, he was a home builder. Mm-hmm. He sold boats. He sold cars. He built fences. And so he worked for himself.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, and then other times not. But the work ethic is one. And then when you see, I think that's the problem with men, is instead of climbing to the, you know, I got to get to that next whatever. I got to get to that next pay raise or that next promotion or that next. How about I got to serve the people that are put in front of me?
Yeah.
Because the funny thing is, when you learn that you start, when you learn and you start to acknowledge and see that God has put all these people in front of you, whether it's a second grade math class that I taught or a Sunday school class or a group of 800 Brazilian kids on a mission trip to Brazil put in front of you, that these kids are not here for you. They're here for you to serve.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
And so when we look at life as service, because when Christ was here, what did he do? He served. He taught. He preached. He corrected. And he acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And then ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, he had a choice. Mm-hmm. He could have taken himself off that cross.
Yeah.
But that's not the service that he was put here for.
Yeah.
The service was for to die so that we could all reach heaven.
Yeah.
And the problem is this world wants to say, I believe in God. Well, there's more to the story. Yeah. And God wants you to get close enough to him to understand that there's more to the story.
Yeah. I remember hearing years ago that just along those same lines of, you know, Satan believes in God. You know, it's like
Absolutely.
The devil believes in God. So it's, so that's not it. You know what I mean? To say, oh, no, I believe in God. It's like, well, all right. Well, now you've got that in common with the devil. Like, what next? You know?
Exactly.
So that's awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, so that's kind of my mantra. If you ask any of my three children, what's your dad's philosophy of life? Every one of them, without skipping a beat, will say, we're put on this earth to serve each other.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a blessing. Such a blessing.
And that's it. So,
oh, I love it. We could talk all day about just more of that. But we are now to the fun segment.
Go for
of
it.
The show, which as listeners of Mana know, these are the same three questions that we ask every guest, and every guest, including Brad, has known these questions in advance. Now, whether or not they actually thought about them and came up with some,
yeah, that's going to be a different story.
Exactly. Brad might be reminded of them right now, but anyway, so same three questions, fun segment, three questions. Fun segment question number one.
Go for it.
If Jesus knocked on your door tomorrow and just wanted to hang out, just said, you know what, me and you, Brad, let's go do something, what would you do with him?
Well, first off, there's a song. Will I stand in your presence or will I fall to my knees?
Yeah.
Because I saw that question and I thought, I don't know that I would just say, what do you need me to do, Lord? Well, I mean, I'm just saying, you're at my door, oh my gosh. And he says, nothing, just let's go. Then I would love to just go hang out at all the places that I've always envisioned Jesus hanging out. And people are like, yeah, to my church. And I'm like, nope. And it's funny, I was on a mission trip in Brazil, and we were walking back. Me and my translator, they speak Portuguese in Brazil, and we're walking back to our hotel. And there's this building with a lot of action going on. I said, what's that? And he said, Brad, that is a bar. I said, let's go in there. He goes, oh, no. And I said, Timóteo, if Jesus were here, we're going to the bar. Right. We're not going in to drink. Right. He might have some wine, but we're not going in to drink. We're going to spread the good news.
Yeah.
I said, we're doing a thing later tonight, and I want to let all those guys know. I mean, those are the men in your community in there. And he's like, oh, we can't go in there. And I would just, hey, Jesus, can you show everybody this is where we're going to go? Because this is where people are hurting.
Yeah.
And, you know, owning a restaurant that has a bar, I mean, I've met a guy who had just, not funny, it blew me away. I was on my way to church on a Wednesday night for choir rehearsal. And I was just going around shaking hands. Hey, how you doing? Good night. Thank you for coming in. And this guy's kind of sad. And my bartender said, hey, man, guy's really down. So I talked to him. Well, he just got back from picking the dress that his fiance would wear to her funeral.
Oh.
And I find this out by talking to him.
Yeah.
Because, see, Jesus wants to go to the hurt and the lost.
Yeah.
And so I want to go witness him doing that.
That's cool.
And just, I mean, because there's so many around us in our family and in our community and in our home and our church, in our work. There's so many people around us that are hurting.
Yeah.
And Jesus knows who they are.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, my gosh. That's so great. So great. All right. Fun segment question number two. If you could go to church with any other guy, living or dead, okay, and you don't even need to know him. So it could be like a famous person, or it could be somebody that you know or knew. Going to church with another guy, living or dead, who would it be?
So Donald Trump would be interesting to go to church with. But no, actually, as I thought about that question, my grandfather, I said, passed away when I was six.
Yeah.
And I have his Bible. And there's a lot of scribble in that Bible. And I have a Bible of my own with a lot of tons of scribble in it that one of my kids or grandkids someday is going to go, what does this mean? But to be able to walk into church with him and say, okay, Papa, because I never got to know him, just through stories from my grandmother, my mom, her sisters. So that's the guy, because I never got to know him, and I'm a big family guy.
Yeah.
And I would love to walk into church with him and just praise with him and worship with him and just see where it all began, because he's before me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think of when you talk about that Bible, I think he'd love to see that Bible that you talked about at camp, the one that you still have. Like that would be, I mean, that's a little bit of the legacy that you inherited from him. That's neat. All right, last question, and this is one that you can draw on, I'm sure, your own experiences, because you are such a mentor. You've spent your whole life helping young people develop, and kind of a maturity of faith. So this could be an actual answer, or it could just be that's an interesting question. Let me come up with something. But if you could give a piece of advice to a younger guy about just being comfortable in his faith, you know, and just being able to, know who he is and know who God is. And, because it's one thing to be, 50-something guys like us, being able to now sort of wax poetic on living lives of faith, as flawed as we are. But, it's different when you're 14. And so what piece of advice would you give a younger guy about developing a comfort with his faith?
Well, I think that's, and of course I learned it as I got older, or realized what I was doing as I got older. But that goes back to that servanthood. And look at the people around you as, what can I do to serve you?
Yeah.
I don't care if you're at a drunken party in college. Can I help you take out the trash and clean all this up?
Yeah.
What can you do to help the people around you, to serve them? Because the way people see Christ in you, Christ was a servant when here, a teacher, a motivator, an educator. He was everything we've talked about tonight. Mm-hmm. But are people seeing that in you? And challenge them. Because it's not hard to serve. You don't have to be outgoing. You don't have to be outspoken. You can do it in the background. Yeah. Your gift might be something completely different, but as far as taking out the trash at somebody's house,
yeah,
whose husband doesn't take it out for her, or whose kids don't, and you're like, hey, can I get this for you? Can I do this? Can I move your car up? Or can I do, what can I do to help you?
Yeah.
People don't hear that anymore.
Yeah.
And so for someone young looking to make it in the world through faith, go serve.
Yeah.
No matter what you're doing, I don't care if you work for Coca-Cola, IBM, Amazon. I don't care who you work for or if you're a pastor. Because there's a lot of pastors who are on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And I think, as I look back over my life, having humbled pastors who say, I'm flawed too, is very important. And believe me, when I speak to young kids, they know I'm flawed too.
Yeah.
No way am I standing up here saying, being perfect or saying I'm perfect. And I get calls from some of my kids' friends. Hey, Mr. Brad, how do you do this? Or I'm getting a job doing this. Can you give me some advice? Those are the best calls ever. Why? Because they're not calling the party dad over here, and they're not calling the crazy dad over here or the drunk dad over here. They're calling me.
Yeah.
Because when they look at all the dads around them, they're like, okay, I need common sense.
Yeah.
I need something to lean on here.
Yeah.
And so, giving that advice to a young man is just like, look around you and see where you can serve.
Yeah.
Because when you serve, you become Christ-like.
Oh.
And the more you serve, the more Christ-like you become. So,
Brad Golden, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Manna. If you have any questions or recommendations for future guests, send them to mannapodcast@gmail.com.